Welcome back to Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. Now, if you are just joining us, I am talking with Al Topping, who was the station manager in Saigon, Vietnam, at the time when Saigon fell. And just if you've heard the stories through the years, you know about just the panic and the desperation that was taking place as Vietnam was really falling to the North Vietnamese. And Al is sharing his story because he was very instrumental in helping with evacuating his employees at the time. So Al, welcome back to the show. I want to jump right back in because you were sharing with us just really that whole panic and everything at the end there as South Vietnam was really just giving way and falling at that time. So how did this collapse of South Vietnam really influence then your planning at this point? Because I know you've said that there were some plans for people to go to rooftops and wait for helicopters. But now as you see all of this panic that's going on with flights coming in and people so desperate that they're actually just really hanging onto the wings almost literally, how did this influence then you to move forward with a plan?
Well, Anita, let me tell you this. When I saw what happened in Da Nang to that 727, my first thought was, oh my goodness, if we have a 747 on the ground in Saigon and the same thing would happen, there's no telling how many people would try to get on that airplane, and it would just be total chaos, and probably even worse than that. So at this point, I'm still struggling with how do I get our people out. And as we fast forward a little bit, back in early April, there was a massive movement which was called Operation Baby Lift, where we were involved in charter flights from Saigon to the United States, carrying hundreds of orphans that were up for adoption in the United States. But normally, when things were normal, in order to process, you know, one or two or whatever number of orphans, it also took weeks and months to do that. So suddenly, everything was waived, and the adoption process was expedited. And that night, I started thinking that, in fact, that day, on April 4th, we had two 747s that went out with over 600 orphan babies with all volunteer crew, volunteer nurses, volunteer doctors, and so on. And I had this crazy thought. I said, well, if we can do this with these children, let's see if we can do it with our employees. So I had our HR manager go down to the ministry, and I said, find out what do we do that would enable me to adopt our employees and their families. He looked at me like I was, you know, not well.
But I know. Anyway, the families too? Wow.
I know. So he goes down there, and sure enough, he comes back with a stack of documents, and he said, just sign these papers. And everything, of course, written in Vietnamese, and I'm just signing everything like crazy. And sure enough, they approved it. So all of a sudden, I'm now the parent of over 300 Vietnamese people.
Well, let me ask you this, though, Al. Let me just jump in and ask you this question, because that's amazing, first of all, that it was able to be approved like that. But I know cultural differences must have made that difficult, too, because in Vietnam, I would think that family means everyone who's part of the family that's alive, or that everyone's related to who's living. Here in the U.S., family is a little bit more the immediate family. So how did you all decide who stays and who goes?
Yeah, you're exactly right. Because the company said we would commit to evacuating the employees and their immediate family. And as you said, we're talking about, excuse that noise, I'm out of the golf course right now.
it's a good place to be.
Yeah. So, as you said, in that culture, immediate family is everybody. Basically, everyone living in the household, and in most cases, you know, there was husband, wife, children, grandmother, grandfather, and so on. So when I told our manager to give me a list of all the employees with the names of the immediate family. Well, from 61, that number exploded to over 700 names.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's what I said. I said, you know, we can't do this. I said, I don't want to get into the situation of making decisions for you and for the staff, but you guys have to get together and talk it over and come back with a smaller number.
And
because,
how many?
You know, I mean, go ahead.
And I was just going to ask, and how many passengers does a 747 hold?
Well, at that time, the seating configuration was 375 passengers.
So, yeah, so 700 wouldn't fit for sure.
No, I mean, I don't think so. So, as it turned out, you know, this was probably one of the most difficult things for me is to, how do you tell people, look, you can't take your grandmother, or you can't take your uncle, you can't take your grandfather. And I didn't want to get into the process of going down the list and deleting people. And I let them do that. So they came back with 300 plus names, and that's what we went with. And as it turned out, on the day of departure, on the 24th, with our staff and their families and normal bookings and so on, we departed Saigon with 463 people on a 375 seat capacity airplane. I'll tell you, when we finally started our takeoff roll, I'm sitting in the cockpit in the jump seat behind Captain Berg, and I'm looking out the window, and I wasn't breathing, I don't think. I'm just thinking, well, here we are, it's a beautiful, bright, sunny day, and this 747 is lifting off the runway, and this area is surrounded by North Vietnamese troops, and we're not going to make it. We just can't make it. And I'm just waiting to be hit by a rocket, and it's all over. Fortunately, it didn't happen. And once we crossed the coastline and I saw those ships out there waiting for evacuations to take place, I knew we had made it. But I can tell you that the night before that departure, mm-hmm. That was the first time that our people knew that the next morning we were going to be leaving Vietnam for the last time. Because if I had informed them about the departure time earlier, maybe a week or so earlier, and the word would get out within the city, that airplane might still be there. So they didn't know anything. And at this point, too, I mean, I can tell you that our staff was, I could sense that they were losing, you know,
confidence
in me, yeah. Because I couldn't tell them when. I could just tell them we were going to do it.
Well,
and I could tell that they were not too comfortable with that response. I just told them, just have faith and let's get it done.
Just have faith and believe in you. Now, Al,
yeah.
I definitely want to hear more about that, because that's the stories that I used to sit with you at lunch over at the Pan Am headquarters down in Miami, and you would tell some of those stories about just really all of the emotions and everything as you were actually evacuating. We need to take a break, but when we come back,
okay.
I want you to tell us a little bit more about that. This is Travel Bags,
okay.
with Anita and Friends, and we're listening to Al Topping. Tell us about 40 years ago leaving Saigon. Stay put. We'll be back in a few minutes on North Georgia's News Talk, WDUN.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do you